I'm speaking today with Victoria Fu. Victoria earned her bachelor's degree in chemical engineering from UC San Diego in 2012 and a master's degree in nanoengineering the following year. I met her in the fall of the same year when she was a student in my graduate course on intermolecular and surface forces. She's worked in a number of laboratories and companies from Foxconn to L'Oreal and in the last 3 years has started a skincare and cosmetology company, Chemist Confessions. Victoria, thanks for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thanks, Darren. I'm excited to be here.
You and I have both spent significant time on the East Coast and the West Coast, though you're currently located in California. What's your best argument in favor of the East Coast?
In favor. Well, I think that if you have the opportunity, you should definitely try to work out there for a few years. The dynamic is so different. First of all, people are brutally honest. And so usually people think that as like maybe a little mean or, you know, rude, but I actually really appreciate that aspect because it's just straightforward and everyone's about, you know, everyone seems like they're in a rush. I used to live in Manhattan and but I love that energy, you know, everyone's out there hustling and just ready to do the grind. And people love the vibe in New York. Everything's, there's experiences out there, the way they can like mesh art and technology. It's a great city to be in for a few years, but ultimately I'm a more laid back person. So I did make my way back to Cali and I'm now in LA. Also the pizza and bagels there, you will never find better. So that part I am definitely for the East Coast.
It's interesting that you mentioned the vibe and the intensity. One time I was at a Temecula olive oil store, a company store, and the clerk there grew up on the East Coast and she said, "Oh, you grew up on the East Coast too? Oh, then you can own things on the West Coast." Those people are so laid back. Anyway, I don't know if that's true, but I think the impression is definitely shared by a lot of people.
Yeah, so I will say my boyfriend, I met him on the, he's from Long Island and he used to, that's how we met, was when I was in the city and he moved over, he got a job in LA. And I just remember him like driving, he was driving on the, just on the highway. And even though we were in like LA traffic, it's like, LA is awful, right? He was just driving there and he was like looking around. It was like this classic LA sunshine day. And he just let out a big sigh. And he was like, it's just not that hard here. So he just, yeah, he's born, raised out in New York. So coming here, I think it's just, yeah, it is significantly different.
Where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in just like a small suburb north of Houston. Now it's not so small. But when I grew up, it was like right outside my window was a horse farm. And now it's like, it's completely changed. It's, yeah, there's all these buildings and commercial buildings and whatnot. But yeah, back then it was like just a small southern town.
But now, you know, Houston and the surrounding suburbs are becoming a bit of a tech hub and Austin is becoming a tech hub. So it's almost like, you know, the new southern alternative to California to do business and entrepreneurship, which I
so affordable, just lifestyle, land. Yeah, it's everything about it just makes it, yeah, the new tech hub. I totally agree.
What did your parents do?
So my parents, my dad was a mechanical engineer he started out at Compaq, which actually was like just 10 minutes from where I grew up. And my mom was a programmer, but also for Compaq. They actually met in college in OSU. But long story short, my mom, she's Vietnamese. She came here during the Vietnam War. And then my dad came through a scholarship to finish his master's degree from Taiwan. And then they met at the co-op.
So both engineers.
Both, yeah, exactly. Both STEM people. And that's definitely I think where I got that influence and that curiosity. It's just, yeah, they both are engineer minds. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about doing something else when you were in high school and applying to college?
Yeah. So in high school, the funny thing was I was an orc dork, like an orchestra. I was a violinist. And for a long time I was thinking, oh, I love the fine arts. And for one summer I thought, oh, maybe like being in the orchestra would be like a great experience. But of course, I think also with some influence from my parents, like, you know, it's definitely a long and competitive road. And I realized that I didn't necessarily love the instrument, like as a solo, like violinist, but I loved like that team atmosphere and just being able to like, yeah, collaborate. I loved that aspect and ultimately realized it wasn't for me. So I did at one point think maybe I joined the orchestra. And then classic Asian family, I thought maybe, yeah, I should be a doctor. And so that's actually how I first went into UCSD was I was bioengineering pre-med. Mm-hmm. And
I started college as bioengineering pre-med.
Sorry?
I started college as bioengineering
pre-med. Oh, yeah, there you go. So were you also thinking maybe you would go the med school route?
Yes, but earlier than that, I was thinking I would go the music route as well. Oh, like wow. I played trombone and piano in high school. And, you know, the violin to me is a solo instrument, or the trombone really isn't. It has a little, I hate to say, I mean, it sounds great in movies, like, you know, the Star Wars theme, but it has kind of an ugly sound in a home and alone. In a neighborhood.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's also that same, like, you know, harsh sound that makes it sound good in like the Imperial March or like a superhero movie or something.
Do you still play?
I don't play the trombone. I do play the piano. Actually, it was a gift. I bought myself a piano as a gift for being promoted to full professor last summer.
Awesome.
I have that now. Like, I have a couple of videos on YouTube of me playing that I've like written in language that, like, I've written the piece out using like kind of like nerd, like hacker language, because I don't want people to search for it and find my recordings, which are full of mistakes and stuff. Because I know that there are like 6-year-olds who can play those pieces a lot better than I can. But yeah, I mean,
to like put yourself out there into the on the interwebs nowadays, it's just like, I'm sure you now with YouTube videos, but with our content now, I just feel like I still get a lot of anxiety even writing like a tiny post on the interwebs. Like Wild West of a world.
There's a lot of that, but I think that's also where some of the excitement and also the impact comes from. Like, I'm a big believer in empathy as a civilizing like influence. So a lot of times people have these heavily curated, you know, internet personalities that are just like a source of depression and anxiety for, you know, people, especially teenagers and college students. Whereas I think it's a lot more valuable to have somebody who's like achieve some amount of professional success, just talk about the warts and like, you know, me or anybody else are trying to get like credit for spilling their guts, but really just being human. I think there's a lot of value in not even that serious of, you know, exposure. It's just like, these are things that we do and think and have gone through. And these are some wrong notes and some piano piece that I like.
Yeah, no, that's great. I miss that aspect of the internet. So I know we're kind of going off tangent, but I will come back to it. But now we do a lot of like education in like cosmetic science. And, you know, for some reason, like, I think in the beauty space, just because there's so much media and everyone's like an influencer, everyone's someone, you know. My co-founder and I, first of all, I absolutely did not, like, I didn't have an Instagram before any of that. I didn't have a YouTube channel. I never did any of that content. So I kind of forget that science is, there is still this like human aspect of science. But unfortunately in the beauty space, it's like, there's no room for that because everyone feels a need to be perfect and right. But science is so flawed, you know, like there's mistakes, there's different angles, there's different interpretations, you know, yes, there's logic and rules behind it and methodology, but I think that's the one thing that I really struggle with when we do the skincare science, and there's so much gray area. But nowadays, like when on the internet, it's just everything required for things to take and for messages to be strong, everyone has to take like a very black and white stance. And this is where like Gora and I, we try so hard to like make sure the message is still like our perspective, that truly like a lot of things, especially in the beauty space, there's not enough data behind it, because that, where's the money to do all that research? But it's truly like a gray picture, and like we just won't conform to the idea that like you have to take this like really strong, solid black and white, you know, the white black and white perspective, even though like that probably will get more attention, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I could go on with the stuff for I could talk about this for a long time.
It's true. I mean, subtlety is a lost art in product positioning. But it's, you know, as a scientist who has started a company in the beauty space, it can be a value proposition to have some, like, you know, to explore gray areas to make it a part of your brand, that these are data and this is how we have acted upon it so far. So why did you major in chemical engineering? So your parents were mechanical engineers and computer scientists. So how did that happen?
So that goes back to me being bioengineering pre-med. I realized I didn't want to be a doctor. But I realized that very late on, like probably close to my third year, I think in my third year of being at UCSD, being bioengineering pre-med. I'm a lead sophomore. So around that time, I was kind of scrambling. And to be honest, I don't think I had a clear vision of why chemical. I felt like it was the easiest transition to out of bioengineering pre-med. And might be, you know, I was still interested in like the general engineering and like chemistry, like this kind of concept. But in terms of real application, I don't think I actually knew what to do for a long time. And it didn't happen until I took, I think, an elective with Dr. Zhang. I think there was like an intro to nanomedicine class. And that really, for some reason, I was like, this is, first of all, really cool. I felt like a really cool bridge of what I was learning. And I just, I that class like helped, I think, really paved the way to like where I am now. yeah, so that's really how it started.
Liang Fong Song, one of our founding faculty members. Great. So is that also how your interests sort of switched over to the nano realm? And that's why you ended up continuing to grad school, but to do your MS in nano engineering as opposed to chemical engineering?
Exactly. Yeah. So during the class, I was like, I want to learn more. I want to learn how this can transition into a career. And I asked Dr. Zong if I could have 10 minutes to just pick his brain. And he actually was just kind enough to allow me to shadow one of his grad students. And at the time she was doing liposome work to treat acne and amongst other infections. And I think having that experience, I did research in his lab. Yeah, I was a student in his lab probably until I graduated my master's degree. And I will tell you that experience was probably more powerful, one of the most powerful experiences leading into the industry for me. Mm-hmm. Just because
doing undergraduate research and master's research.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Going into the master's, continuing that research into master's. Just learned so much. And it's one thing to read about it and study it. It's another thing to apply and see how that science gets put into just real research and mm-hmm. see results. Yeah.
And your work on liposomes is actually highly relevant to mRNA vaccines because they're formulated in liposomes.
Yeah. It's so exciting to see where it's gone. And we can talk more about this when I'll explain about the beauty industry, but it's, really now, especially incredibly relevant to where skincare is going. So I couldn't be more happy at some of the chance circumstances that happened during my education at UCSD. Yeah.
So the next question I ask, I want to go the way you want to go in the story. Yeah. So you can answer either one, but I want to make sure we get to both. So what did you do after graduation, and how did you develop an interest in business? So maybe one came before the other, but I'll let you answer in whatever order.
So graduation was I'll start with that. I actually realized I didn't want to go into pharma, which is where my research was headed. And the reason being is because just project timeline was going to be much longer. There's also a lot of pressure too in pharma. So, but at the time I needed a job. So I actually applied everywhere and anywhere. And it just so happened, I at the same time was like, okay, well, realistically pharma, but then can't I do something more fun? And obviously with the acne research, I was like, yeah, I think it would be great to work maybe in the skincare industry. Those project timelines are much shorter. You actually get to see, your work on a shelf. So maybe that's a good route. And lucky enough, I will say UCSD, being on the West Coast, you're quite siloed from the beauty industry because most of it's on the East Coast. But I got lucky back in the day with LinkedIn. I happened to message their HR and shared with them my background, and that's how I started, really. I had no idea
at L'Oreal.
At L'Oreal, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea at the time that I was going to do a business. I would have never guessed. Yeah. So
are there any skills you wish you had picked up in your engineering education that you carried with you into that job or jobs in the future, but we can get to that?
Actually, not really. Not really going into L'Oreal. The reason why is because I learned most of the job at the company. Formulation chemistry is like, it's relevant to what I learned. There is some overlap, but a lot of you just kind of learn on the job and working on different projects. And maybe the one thing I would say is like take, especially if you're doing something in like the beauty space where the customer is like so close to the product, anything on marketing or finance will help give you a bigger picture, more well-rounded picture. Yeah, but that's really it. Yeah.
Had you thought about doing like one of those mini MBA courses, or maybe that wasn't available at the time, but I took one as a postdoc and it was really valuable even to become a professor.
I didn't know that such a thing existed. I definitely don't recommend getting an MBA though. Personally, I just have seen that unless you go into an MBA with a very clear goal of what you're trying to achieve, I haven't seen that been incredibly fruitful, especially in my field. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think in some circumstances, it can get one out of a rut. Maybe they've been pigeonholed as a researcher only, whereas they want to, you know, get on the business track, but don't really have an entry point, you know, unless they redefine themselves. And an MBA is a way I've seen for some people to do that.
Yeah, agreed.
That's interesting. I would think that especially in entrepreneurship, you just need, you need to spend a lot of time with the problems that customers are facing, and you need to really internalize them and get inside the industry.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were there for about 3 years, and then why did you decide to leave and start a new venture?
Yeah, so I actually was trying to leave to go to a different job. In the beauty industry on the East Coast, actually, it's common to
non-disclosure agreement.
Not NDA. Just the NDA, but holy cow, my brain is it's. We had to sign something where, you know, they can hold us after a certain, if we decide to leave and decide to exercise that agreement. Mm-hmm. So for 1 year, I actually wasn't allowed to work. They prevented me from going to that job. And I actually wanted to go back into research, actually. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back into like looking at the actual raw material, the ingredient side, the synthesizing side. So they decided to exercise that agreement, and I for 1 year I was kind of had some time off, and it just so happened that my co-founder also had the same thing happen to her. And during that time we kept in touch, and we both actually had plans to leave the industry entirely. The reason why I wanted to leave was more because being a chemist, you learn so much on the PD side from formulation. Basically, our job was to formulate everything in the jar, make sure that it held up in QAQC. So, you know, make sure that it held up in its final packaging, that it could withstand, certain real case scenarios versus like temperature and like its transportation time, you know, things like that, and actually make it onto shelf and survive its actual shelf life. So when you formulate and you kind of like oversee all that, you get a really good sense of what it takes to like bring a product to market and hold up in safety and quality, but you actually get very little say in what formula you're making. A lot of that is decided by marketing. It makes sense. It is a very heavily marketing driven industry. And so there's very little room for creativity, freedom to formulate. And it kind of felt like it was going stale for me. And that, I think that feeling, I just never really liked it, even when I was, you know, ever since I was young. So decided, yeah, maybe it's time. And that's inevitably what drove me to leave.
So while we're still there, what was the date? What were the day-to-day activities like? Was it like theoretically, like this component will mix with this and have a good shelf life, or are you like mixing stuff on a lab bench and
on the lab bench? Yeah. So L'Oreal, you know, such a big company, has just, there's so many resources, so many materials, and so many departments just within R&D. And I was a chemist more on the end stage. So this is where you're actually putting all the real materials together and putting an actual formula that's going to go to the plant. But they have like scientists like really far upstream, even where they're like synthesizing new molecules, you know? So, and I will say, if anyone watches this and wants to go into the industry, you don't actually have to have my specific background. They'll take anyone in STEM. Material science is really important for them. Any sort of engineering, I think I've met, and it's because you learn so much on the job, that it's more, they need that kind of STEM background as opposed to STEM experience. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So producing, analyzing data, applying it to new scenarios. Exactly. What sorts of analytical techniques did you use on the products?
Yeah, so the funny thing is, on production, a lot of it is more just kind of like industrial testing. So viscosity, pH, for sunscreens, UV vis. But then as you go upstream, the funny thing is, I had a project where I was actually looking at rheology, which is a whole nother level of complexity and science that I absolutely, just no concept of in some ways. What else do they do? They use HPLC. They do a lot of ingredient metering, just to make sure their actives, our actives are, you know, hold up over time. There's that degradation that we have to worry about a lot. So yeah, hopefully that gives you an idea.
Sure. So rheology, for people who might be watching who don't know, is the study of viscoelasticity. Rheology is the study of flow. So materials like skincare products have an elastic component and a viscous component, and rheometry as a way to disentangle those various contributions and try to manipulate them in one direction or the other. You've now decided to leave L'Oreal. You're prevented from getting another job at a direct competitor, but are you prevented? You're not prevented from starting your own company, right?
I actually was. And I didn't know, I still didn't know at that time that I was going to do a company. So how it went was, Gloria and I kept in touch, and Gloria is my co-founder, and we decided, why not do one last hurrah to the industry and just share our industry insider perspective, to see if it helps anyone, you know, make a better shopping purchase, you know. And we just didn't know, you know, ultimately, I think the market at the time and the way marketing is, it just felt like the consumer just really didn't know much, you know, and they don't have the capability to know much about skincare. And so we were just like, yeah, I think everyone nowadays we're moving towards like so much like research first before purchase. And I think the industry like really needed that. And so we started writing like just little like skincare science blips. We talk about the biology of skin, why you get wrinkles and pigmentation, things like that. So they understand like how that process starts. And then one of the things we started becoming known for is doing decodes, where we would share a picture of the back of like a product, the ingredient list. And then we'd like help them kind of read and pick, I guess, familiarize themselves like with these ingredients, in the hopes that, you know, at least when they shop, they can like pick out these words and they're like, oh, I have a good connotation of this. I know this is like a hydrating ingredient. I've heard it before, or like bad. But to be honest, in the skincare industry, there's not really an ingredient that's like inherently bad. And the idea behind it was that just kind of break down that barrier of like hearing foreign science-y ingredient names doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad for you, which is sadly where the industry is like headed towards like being clean, being, you know, toxin free. Get this, there is even one where they call it chemical free, which absolutely makes no sense. It drives me up the wall. So we're still trying to just like fight those like just broad sweeping claims and just have people like not be so afraid that like these products are going to cause cancer. You know, they're going to, you know, they're endocrine disruptors. There's just a lot of fear mongering in the industry. And we just really wanted to fight that and bring kind of that transparency so they can get better products. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what would you know about shopping for, like, take a simple example, like a hand moisturizer that the ordinary person wouldn't know? So suppose you were on a flight and they lost your bag and you were in, you know, giving a business presentation in a small town that had a CVS. Okay. And what goes through your mind when you're in the skincare aisle?
Yeah. So first I would say that if you have dry skin, don't think of the hand cream as just for your hands. It's probably a great face moisturizer as well. We try to tell people that you don't need like a butt cream and a, you know, a left hand cream. that all the ingredients that are used are the same throughout, but it's just a matter of fine tuning and that balance of these ingredients that's more important, I would say. And as far as hand creams, I would say that one thing you don't know is a lot of hand creams use like butters, waxes. These are like heavy occlusive materials that really don't absorb well into your skin just because bigger molecule size. And because of that, that's the reason why it's helping heal your hands. Because at the end of the day, the basic function of a lotion is to prevent water within your skin from evaporating out. So hopefully that gives you some sense of how ingredients are based. And the other thing is like a lot of times people think of moisturizers and they're like, oh, they're just like, they're all the same. It's all like to prevent dry skin. All the ingredients are meant to moisturize, but on a cosmetic science level, there's actually, these ingredients have different functions. So like I mentioned before, butters, they help prevent this water from evaporating out. There's ingredients that actually keep hold of water to the skin. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's helping the water from evaporating out, because those are like water-based molecules. So they still themselves can be evaporated out. So anyways, if that can give you a sense of where, you know, formulation is and how like these ingredients all have very like specific functions. And that's just from like treating the skin. There's also like functional components to actually, you know, have like the formulation chemistry to like keep, you know, these ingredients together in a nice aesthetically pleasing, you know, formula. So yeah, that's general world.
So what was the moment like when you decided to take this knowledge and form a new company? I imagine that you had to be very brave to do that. It must have taken a lot of courage.
Yeah, I don't know if it's bravery or just pure innocence and being really naive. I've had this discussion with Gora so many times, like if I knew what we had to do now and like everything that we've done up until now, like would we still have done it? Of course, the answer is yes, but I don't think we had any concept of just how challenging it was going to be. But it's been incredibly rewarding. Just like doing a business just within 1 year, you probably learn like 3 years worth of things, maybe things not just in science, but just everything, how the world
works. How did you finance your startup costs?
Yeah. We have a private investor that started that just really encouraged us early on. So in that sense, we got very lucky. But since then, we haven't taken in any funding. The reason why is because what we're doing is kind of goes against the grain of like normal entrepreneurship. You know, it's all about revenue targets. It's all about, you know, how many customers you're bringing in, you know. And the thing is, Gloria and I, we value the education so much and the content side so much, and keeping hold of our style of being transparent, giving that gray picture that I mentioned about before. And we just didn't want to lose that control if we decided to bring in like a VC. So not to say that we're closed off to funding, but it's just, you're just being very picky. You know, it's become like, it's been our heart and soul for 3 years. Like we're just very, we think what we've built is something just really special, small, but special, and want to hold on to that. Yeah.
So how do you reach your customers? Are you in stores or is it all based on your website?
80% of it is through our website, and we actually do zero marketing. So it's all through just the education we put out. And the other 20% is just through mom and pop shops, like small pharmacies, small estheticians. We just want to find people that kind of hold those same values. And yeah, that's where we are.
Do you have long-term? So I guess you just answered this question, but yeah. What are your goals? If they're not, sales goals, then is it exposure, education goals? How do you know if you've been successful, or can you, you know, divorce yourself from that idea and just sort of live in the moment, and you've started something great and you enjoy doing it? How do you think about that?
Yeah. So I would say sales goals still in mind, because you got to keep the lights on. So yes, like that's still always, when you do a business, still your, you know, priority. But we're very lean. We are actually only a company of two. This is our actually second full year of sales. So we're very lean. And I think right now we've hit this kind of like growing pain of, okay, we're starting to draw that attention. Now is the time to start scaling. And to be completely honest, I don't know if we have a clear goal in mind, especially with COVID. That threw such a wrench into our plans. We actually, the funny thing is COVID in the US hit when we were at Target Accelerator. And at that time, we were actually thinking of getting ready for big box retail. Mm-hmm. Now that has completely changed. And so for us, it's, you know, I think the important thing for us is we know D2C has always been such a big component for us. Sorry, D2C means direct to consumer for anyone mm-hmm. watching and doesn't know what that means. And so we actually spend a lot of time now just like building out our website. And the other thing that we've been working on during COVID is we were actually approached by a publisher to write a book. It's called Skincare Decoded, and it's the practical field guide to skincare. And it's basically our chemist perspective on how we would shop for these products, talk about the science, talk about the history, just a fun guide. And through that, we realized that, you know, content has been just that driver for us in awareness and like making an impact on the community and, you know, honestly cultivating the brand itself as well. Our mission as a brand is wrapped around the education. It's about, you know, bringing that transparency, that efficacy. So I would say that, you know, this coming year at least is really just trying to kind of finalize or I guess build out more of that content and make it even more approachable. Actually, that's the goal. Because, you know, we definitely brought in a lot of like skincare junkies, people who just like live and breathe skincare products. But we've hit a barrier now with kind of like the general user. Some of the terms we use, we realize we're still like, it's still a little foreign, a little complicated. And so it's just a matter of broadening that audience, really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to introduce you to my sister who has a salon in Las Vegas. She's the proprietor of, anyway, I'm sure you two would have a very rich discussion about this.
I'd love to meet her. Yeah.
How did you decide who is going to do your manufacturing, and how does it work? Do you send them a recipe or how does that work?
So I mentioned my dad is Taiwanese, and Gloria is actually, her parents are Taiwanese as well, and they actually live in Taiwan. So we knew through being in the industry that Taiwan actually is a pretty big beauty manufacturing. They're small island, but back in the day, you know, they were one of the main manufacturers. And then now China and Korea are just behemoths now. But anyway, so we decided to start there. Another reason is because we're very small and we're on a shoestring budget. And we needed someone that was going to give us the time of day to go in and allow us to to formulate and do what we want, basically. And they were extremely kind, and it was just very, they really like threw us a bone in allowing us to start with them, this manufacturer we found. So we got really lucky with them. But yeah, that's how it all started. And we're still partnered with them today. And they've been a big reason why we haven't gone out of stock this year, because Taiwan during COVID has not had to shut down at all, which has mm-hmm. been such a huge help for us during this time. Yeah.
How about other aspects of the supply chain? So mm-hmm. bottles and mm-hmm. artwork design, where do you contract those from?
Yeah, so there are packaging manufacturers, and I will say a lot of times those partnerships we've established through trade shows. So full transparency, that is something we're struggling with right now, mm-hmm. is not having those partners, and I'm sure they also are slammed just because, currently the industry, there hasn't been any like major, what we've noticed is there hasn't been any major launches with COVID. So we know that that alone is kind of a chokehold. And then What was I going to say? So you asked about packaging. And then as far as artwork, that's actually all in-house. So I did the logos and kind of the design of the products myself. I'm a very bad illustrator, Adobe Illustrator user, but that's how I was able to come up with those designs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So again, when I say like why we're so attached, it's like it's become such an incredibly personal like brand for us. Like every aspect has been built by the two of us in house. So yeah, it's cool to see where I've come. And I did not learn that during college. So I had to pick up that skill during the startup. Yeah.
So good endorsement for learning CAD, yeah. Illustrator.
Yeah.
How many products do you have?
So we currently have 8 full-size products. And then this year we'll launch one to two more products. We don't fall. Oh, and another reason why we don't bring in VC money is because most beauty brands, they have like a docket of things that they're launching because new products, new revenue, like, you know, it's like everything's refreshed. Mm-hmm. But for us, just being a chemist and like making a formula that just goes into like another arbitrary formula going into a jar, to me, is just like, that was in some way, sometimes that's your job. That's the reality of it. And we just didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if it's perfect, if that is what you've engineered, then that's what you want people to have.
Yeah, and there's no reason to bring in like just another cleanser, you know, or just another lotion. You know, I think about it from like a sustainability kind of side as well. So we launch one product, and then it's the goal is to fill a need gap or just elevate a product that on the market. And we just plan to formulate like a Gen 2 version of it or Gen 3, but that format is what it is. There'll never be like a duplicated formula with like, you know, some fancy extract or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not our goal. Yeah.
that's fantastic. So we're you know, coming up on time here. Just a couple of last minute questions. Do you still participate in Big Brothers, Big Sisters?
No, I sadly do not. It's the entrepreneur life. There's no way, but definitely an incredibly rewarding experience. I would recommend it to anyone looking to do volunteer work. And it's incredibly impactful on the kids. So yeah, gold star.
And finally, do you have any other advice you'd like to give to our audience?
Okay. So I've thought about this question and I have a few pieces. So one is if you're thinking about like aging in your skin, definitely don't do a startup. That does not help your aging process. As a student, I would say just know that colleges have so many resources. You just have to be proactive about taking advantage of those resources. I think I realized that. I wish I realized that earlier. Sometimes, you know, it's like student, professor, there's like, you know, there's some hesitation, at least for me.
There's a lot of hesitation.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got like nervous every time going to office hours and pounding. And now I just treat it as like an intellectual Disneyland. Like I can find out anything. Exactly. I can find somebody that's curious about any topic somewhere on campus.
So I find that there's definitely a wall. And I think for me, it's just, I never felt like I was good enough or smart enough, but just know that, I mean, the average, you know, TA, grad student, professor, it's like I've always been met with graciousness and patience, and, you know, so there's that as a student. And then if you want to be an entrepreneur, do it. I mentioned that, you know, the road is hard, but it is such an incredible experience that even if you fail, you'll never, just the things that you learn and to think so big and to work on, like, you know, I had to like learn the finances of doing, you know, business and the logistics side, like just your brain works on so many levels. You just never get that experience elsewhere. So yeah, those are my pieces of advice.
Well, Victoria, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experiences and your insights with us. And I look forward to chatting again sometime in the near future.
For sure. Thanks for having me. And if you have any students that have any questions, please send them my way. Yeah, I'd be happy to help them.